Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hundreds of thousands of talented, hardworking students in this country face another challenge, the fact that they aren't yet American citizens. Many were brought here as small children, are American through and through, yet they live every day with the threat of deportation. Others came more recently to study business and science and engineering.
Turn it off. I don't want to listen to this nonsense. He just wants illegal voters. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm not going to play any more of the Socialist States of America speech from last night. You know what I want to talk about? Something that none of the candidates dare to mention. Not Romney, certainly not Gingrich, because he can't. He has no ability to do so. And certainly not Obama. And that is family values. Oh, yes, I know it's an old phrase. It's as old as Ronald Reagan. I want to talk about family values because they're not discussed by any candidate. I'd like to ask you, what are family values? Can you define them? They've kind of gone out with the old. They're not in with the new. What are family values? Which party better defends such family values and how? Democrats or Republicans? Let's get right down to it. What are family values and which party better defends such family values and how? Then I want to ask you this. Is marriage still a valid institution? We know that most, 50% of marriages end in divorce. I'd like you to call this program the Savage Nation. If you've been married over 5 or 10 years to the same person, not married over 5 or 10 years to several people, but married over 5 or 10 years to the same person, and tell this audience, particularly the younger people who've been brainwashed by the socialist educational institution, which is following the protocols of Karl Marx, which aims to destroy the family as a cohesive unit so they can break the society apart. Tell us what the value of marriage is. I think these are fair questions. Again, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you're not prepared to discuss them, we can go on to other topics. I just don't want to say the word Gingrich. I don't want to say the word Romney, even though I just said Gingrich and Romney. If I could avoid saying Obama, I would avoid saying Obama. It's almost impossible, since virtually everything the man said last night was a lie or a parsing of a half-truth, which is about the same thing. It's astounding to me that in one of his, here I go again, one of his lines last night, Obama said, well, listen to clip 13, listen to this lie.
Tax reform should follow the Buffett rule. If you make more than $1 million a year, you should not pay less than 30% in taxes.
And you my see, Republican well, friend... Oh, no, stop. See, most of us who are not Warren Buffett pay much more than 30% in taxes. Warren Buffett is a phony, in my opinion. Warren Buffett has one of the greatest fake acts in the history of the business world. Mr. Nice Guy, this dividend income game of 15% on dividends bypassing the 37% tax rate that most others pay who make over $1 million is astonishing to me. Moreover, Buffett, you may not know this, you know the Keystone Pipeline deal that Obama destroyed? Democrats wanted it. Republicans wanted it. Unions wanted it. Workers wanted it. Makes sense. Bring the oil from Canada to America. Refine it here. You don't have to bring it in from Saudi Arabia. No. Why did Obama kill it? We didn't understand it. It made no sense. The answer is quite clear. We found out that Buffett will clean up real well, because you see the oil that comes from Canada now, not through a pipeline, comes in on the railroad that is owned by Warren Buffett. So it's old 18th century railroad politics. The railroad tycoon, Warren Buffett, yes, a railroad tycoon, Warren Buffett, who knows everything runs on rails. Old Warren Buffett, the old, aw shucks, little old me, I'm a nice guy, driving old Buick, living a little house, Buffett, told his president, the man he put in office, along with the other special interests. We want you to kill that Keystone Pipeline deal so we can continue to make billions of dollars on our investments in transportation and in other manners. That's why I don't want to talk about politics, because they're so filthy. You see, politics are fundamentally run by dirty, disgusting, degenerate lawyers. The worst people on the planet are in politics because, well, the worst people amongst the politicians are those who were previously lawyers. The legal profession is the slimiest profession in the history of the world. Not only do they parse the truth, they never tell the truth. Their entire goal in the legal profession is to lie and cheat and to destroy people. Now, what happens when a lawyer becomes a congressman, or God forbid, a senator, or worse yet, a president? Do I have to spell out for you the fact that we now have a lawyer for a president? Did you hear what I just said to you? We have a lawyer for a president. The least admired profession in American history, a profession dirtier than the oldest profession, which is prostitution, is politics. And the dirtiest amongst the politicians are the lawyers. You have any idea why the country is corrupt, why it's broken, why the people hate politicians? Answer, lawyers. That's why I want to talk about something positive. I want to talk about something positive. Family values, not discussed by Obama. You know, I look at the candidates. We know that Newt Gingrich is unqualified at any weight to talk about family values. Cannot talk about them. Astonishing that he is where he is. He's a completely washed up politician. Then you have Romney, who has the most perfect family values presentation, and his misadvisors are hiding that from the American people. If I were Romney, I would show my wife, my four children, and my grandchildren at every opportunity I could. See, America wants a new mother, and America wants a new father, and America wants a new first family. You don't know that. I dared say the impossible. America wants a new first family. It's not that there's anything wrong with this first family, but there's something missing in the picture that they can't quite put their finger on. They feel something is missing. They don't know exactly what it is. There are very few pictures of the family together. We know that there's a strained relationship between the family and the church. We know there's a strained relationship between the family and celebrating together. At least we don't see many of those pictures. We want a new father and mother in the White House, and we want a new first family. Best qualified for that is Romney. Perfect family story, beautiful wife, beautiful children, beautiful grandchildren, and yet his misadvisors, who are shafting him the way they shafted McCain, but he apparently is too much of a nice guy to even know he's being run off the rails by his own enemies within. Romney's enemies within keep him away from this show and others that could launch him over the top. Instead, they tell him to go on to the very same shows that are undermining Gingrich and Romney. Romney and Gingrich. Gingrich and Romney. Romney and Gingrich. They go before the liberal swine, and they expect the liberal swine to behave any other way except liberal swine. And the very core of their base, they spit on. Why? Because of their misadvisors. And so that's why I'm asking you, family values. Can you define family values? What are they? I mean, we used to hear about them back in, I think it was the 80s, before Bill Clinton came along and destroyed any reference to family and family values, disgraced the presidency, besmirched the White House, made a mockery of marriage. What are family values? And which party better defends such family values, and how do they do so? Is marriage still a valid institution? Call if you've been married over 5 or 10 years to the same person, and tell the listeners of this show, many of whom are young, have a very large younger demographic because they have nowhere else to turn for any kind of inspiration or entertainment. Tell us why you've remained married and what you get out of it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Love and marriage, they go together.
I am not talking about Gingrich, 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 Romney, 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 Paul, 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 Obama, Obama, Obama. I'm not doing it. I'm on strike. First of all, they're committing suicide, which I've said for months, and now finally even dumb McCain is saying to stop the debates. But of course, you know politicians are not that smart, or they do something useful with their lives. And so you're not getting the best and brightest in the political field, by and large. You're getting people who are followers, not leaders. And so for months after I've said stop the debates, suddenly McCain, the genius, came on. Stop the debates because we're only hurting each other. Wow, John, that's really smart, man. That's really set the rocket off on the deck right, with that one. That's terrific. Press the wrong button again. The Republicans are pressing the wrong button. They're knocking down their own aircraft carrier. They're sinking their own aircraft carrier. This creature, Gingrich, every instinct in me tells me he's being funded by the Democrats. Every instinct that I have, and I'll never be able to prove it, it's only one man's suspicion, tells me that these attacks upon Romney are funded by the Democrats to bring Romney down. And that Gingrich is a fake candidate, set up specifically to destroy Romney so that Obama wins again. That's how I see it. It's the end of the story. So that's why I wanted rather talk about family values, marriage, etc. I think my questions are good, but no one's interested. The board's full. We're going to take calls. No one has yet defined family values. We've got a lot of callers on who've been married many years, and they're going to tell us why. I think that's interesting. I'll take them for a while, and then we can move on to something else like eyeglasses or photography or dental work, something really scintillating, you know, eyeglasses, cameras, dental work, something along those lines. Anything but Gingrich and Romney. Anything. I need a break from it. Anything but the word socialist and socialism. Unless you really want to get into Karl Marx, which I'd be glad to do, but then no one would listen to that. So let's begin with a caller who's the longest married on this line here. Texas Ron. Go ahead, Ron. How many years have you been married?
All right. I've been married 45 years.
Good God. That's a beautiful record here on the Savage Nation. Now, why? First of all, the question was, is marriage still a valid institution? Obviously, you're saying yes.
Yes.
What do you get out of marriage?
I get what I put into marriage, and that's communication, loyalty, respect, and working together not only through the hard times, but enjoying the good times.
You know, you just said something interesting that I don't think I've heard too often, if at all, which is I get out of it what I put into it. I've never heard that. Maybe I have, but I don't hear it at all. That's something the president ought to say to the American deadbeat welfare recipients, that you get out of this country exactly what you put into it, and we're not going to support you anymore if you put nothing into it. Instead of crying to us about illegal immigrant children, anchor babies, about how much we owe them, what he ought to say is their parents put nothing into this country, and they have no right to demand that their children receive citizenship. But all right, I don't want to get too political, but you make a very good point, which is you get out of your marriage what you put into it. I think that should be one of the vows that religious figures use in a ceremony, which is, you know, when they're marrying us, right? They ought to say, remember this one, you'll never forget it. You get out of marriage exactly what you put into it. That's phenomenal. That's beautiful, man. Really good.
Thank you. I love the woman more today, if it's possible, than I did the day I married her.
God, you're one of the good ones. You're one of the good ones. You probably have a million women weeping in this country right now, Ron. They wish they had met you a long time ago, hey?
I'll tell you what, it is exactly what you put into it, Doctor.
And well, Ron, let me ask you an odd question. I don't mean to be difficult in any way, but in these years of marriage, you probably had some bad spats with each other, correct?
Oh, no doubt. We've had spats. At one time, we actually sat in front of a lawyer. And the lawyer said, look, you guys, y'all go home, you think about it over the weekend, and you come back and see me. Well, that was the break we needed.
And, well, that's like a 10-day waiting period for a shotgun. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's been uphill ever since. And it was up, you know, we had our downs, we had our ups. And
well, Ron, you're a normal man. You have obviously looked at other women in the streets, haven't you?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, I don't deny the male in me that looks, you bet. But
so how do you deal with that? How do you deal with one of the cardinal sins called lust?
I just say it's a good-looking woman, but it isn't near what I have.
Well, I'm going to give the audience one that they've never heard. You ready for this one? It's from Chinese poetry. Look at a passing beauty as you would a passing cloud.
Very good.
Ah, Hey, that's a good one. See, that's for the younger guys who are filled with lust and filled with desire and charging around like mad animals. Whenever they see a pretty woman go by, they get distracted. They run after her. They run down the street. Their heart races. They wonder if they could meet her. They wonder if they could get her number. They wonder if they could text her tomorrow, whatever. You don't have to own everything that walks by you in the street. You don't have to pursue every woman that walks down the street. What you have to do is say to yourself what the Chinese poets wrote hundreds of years ago, look at a passing beauty as you would a passing cloud. So, again, I think this show could turn into something more than I originally anticipated when I envisioned doing something non-political, which is about family values. What are they? So far, no one's called to define what family values are. And it's very interesting to me that the board is so full right now with callers, mainly women. I mean, mainly men are calling right now. Let's go to Joe in New York on WOR. Joe, you're calling on the marriage and family values story, correct?
Yes. Yeah, thank you for taking the call.
How many years are you married to the same woman?
34.
Okay, and why do you stay married?
We love each other very much, and you have to put the other person before yourself.
Murder in our society. In our society, no one does that. Very few can even know what that word means.
You ain't kidding, Michael. You ain't kidding.
No one knows what that means in our country. It's all about me, 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 narcissism, narcissism, narcissism. I am so beautiful. I am so beautiful, I should be worshipped. It comes from the childhood on. The upbringing in the crib with the Spock-like upbringing, where the infant is turned into a god. How could every infant be a god? It's one thing to cherish a child and to raise a child properly and give it love and respect, but for God's sakes, when you put an infant on a pedestal and you keep doing it all through its teen years, all it can wind up is a lawyer from Berkeley. I'll be right back.
Savage. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com.
Talk about family values. An article just came out called Kitty Couture. What does that mean? Well, stores in Manhattan's Fifth Avenue, such as Gucci Kids, has opened up boutique for children 12 and under, $2,900 fur coat, $1,500 sleeveless dress, $3,800 biker jacket, all for fashionistas ages 12 and under. Is this family values? Are these type of items something you'd think would raise a daughter who would have any values whatsoever other than narcissism and insanity? You dress up a little girl like this, $1,600 trench coat, $1,100 sundress. You're telling me, get back to me when she's 16. Then get back to me when she's 25. Rehab city. You may as well buy a pass to a rehab facility the day you buy them that $1,600 sundress. That's all I can tell you. There's such a thing as taking care of a child, and taking too much care of a child is another thing. So we're talking about family values, not discussed by Obama, Romney, certainly not by Gingrich. He's the least qualified of all of the candidates to talk about them. But this used to be a topic in American politics, believe it or not. But apparently the wise men of our society, if you want to call them that, have decided that families don't exist, families don't matter, and family values matter even less. So I feel that as a talk show host who engages in long discussions of various topics over a long period of time, why not talk about family values? Who defines them? And which party better defends such family values? And then I ask, is marriage still a valid institution? If you care to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website that goes with this. Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Oh, no. We were holding on to D. D in Las Vegas. D, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, how are you doing? I so appreciate you taking my call. I listen to you every day that I can, and first of all,
that's what makes me get up in the morning, and the only reason I continue in radio is because of listeners like you. It's my audience, my audience, my audience. It's the connection between my audience and myself.
You're so insightful, and you make me think way outside the box. But when first of all, to answer your question, which party, I mean, definitely, I have to say it is the GOP. But if first, the one big comment I want to make on the GOP is the fact that if we were to get someone like Newt and Callista in the White House, what a role model.
Record. No, it's horrible. It's the end of the Republican Party. As I said, Gingrich has destroyed the Republican Party already. He's liable to destroy the Republic if he continues his charges and attacks upon Romney and the others. He's a one-man he's a one-man wrecking machine.
He is. And I wish Romney, I am a Romney supporter, and I have a Christmas card from him and his family with just he and his wife with
Hold it. I didn't really want to turn this into who you support. I'd like to know how you define family values. You would think that's something that's self-evident and people can define it for themselves. I don't believe that's true. What are family values? How do you begin even talking about them?
To me, it started with the Bible. You look at Genesis, where the first commandment that God gave to Adam and Eve pertained to parenthood. They were commanded to multiply and replenish. And with that, I look at those unbelievable responsibilities to raise them and do the best they can. We all
yes.
have our free agency, but when it comes to the values, are we teaching them hard work? Are we teaching them ethical values? Are we teaching them to love one another? What are we as parents teaching them? And I do believe, personally, that a marriage is between a man and a woman. And to go forward...
You don't have to state that in any defensive manner. That's obvious to anyone on the planet.
Yeah, and just the fact that I've been married 14 years. I waited till I was 33 to get married. My first child, who is now only 12, I have three girls, and...
I think you've made your point, and I do appreciate your calling. That's beautiful, and thank you very much for joining the conversation. Okay? Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it. That is from Genesis. It's not the first statement of Genesis, but there's another part of Genesis that you rarely hear, which is, and the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. It is not good that man, the man, should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him. Now, I don't want to go into the phantasmagoria of the Bible, of God making woman out of the ground, or taking a rib from Adam's chest. I used to love that title, Adam's Rib. It was a beautiful title. It's a shame I wasn't writing at that time. But let's assume that man and woman were created for each other. This line is very good. It is not good that the man should be alone. But here's another one you probably haven't seen from Genesis. Tell me if you disagree with the Bible. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. What's intriguing to me is that phrase, shall cleave unto his wife. This defies the feminist view that the wife is subservient to the man from the patriarchal biblical point of view. In fact, the opposite is stated right here. The man is cleaving unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Now, that's a heck of a line. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Of course, that was an eon, actually, prior to the advent of the pornographers, who have made nakedness into something, in some cases, to be ashamed of. But let's put that aside for the moment and go back to the primary topic. 1-800-449-8255. You can hear my teapot boiling here in the radio studio. No, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to play rock and roll because I'm alone in the studio today except with Teddy, and he doesn't know how to take the tea off the pot, off the boiling. Why can't dogs learn to do anything? You know, isn't there anything a dog could learn to do? They're useless. They're like a hobo, a hippie, a bum, a welfare recipient. They're all our personal hippies laying around the house. Wherever you turn, there's the hobo laying around. All he wants to do is go out and eat, play. But when you ask him to do anything, where is he? Never. All he does is lay around. Yeah, play music for 30 seconds. I'll be right back. Everything's safe now. We're back. We're back in the Savage studio. I really, you know, one of these days I have to get someone to work with me here. I know I'm a real loner. I got to tell you the truth. I find I can concentrate on my listeners better if I'm alone because, you know, when you're playing to an audience in your studio, as some prefer in this business, you wind up playing to the people in your studio. And then you lose contact with your listeners. And I think one of the things that I define as a better part of my show is I actually hear listeners, and I think that it reflects in their loyalty. So what are family values? We really haven't defined them yet. What do they mean? I once knew a so-called poet who I've mentioned from time to time on this show in North Beach, San Francisco. There's some amazing people in the area and some real deadbeat bums. This guy posed as some famous poet, and for some reason, he bamboozled a lot of people into thinking he was actually a poet. Now that he's been dead a number of years, nobody remembers him, of course. As I knew all along, he was just a loudmouth, drunken heroin addict. And when he used heroin, he was actually easy to be around. When he was a drunk, he would get into fights with everybody. He was a violent, evil man. But this guy impregnated one of the nicest girls around and had a child with her. And I remember he and I once had a very loud dispute in a bar in North Beach, and he screamed at me, "I'm a father, too." I said, "You're a father like a dog." I said, "A dog has a child the way you had a child. You did nothing for that child. All you did was, well, whatever." Anyway, turned into glasses thrown at each other, etc. But the point is that's not a father. That doesn't make you a father. A father is a man who sticks around to raise the child. That's a father. What makes you a father? Because you impregnated a woman? What are you, a dog or a cat or a mink or an ocelot? That's not a father. An animal has better sense of staying around and protecting the wife and children than most of the men today. Take a look at Hollywood, what they do with the women there. The women have to go to artificial insemination clinics to get semen, to get impregnated. That's the kind of fathers that they're talking about. So, you know, it's almost like a futile discussion that I'm having, maybe with myself here. But what is marriage? What's the value of it? What are family values? Certainly, staying with a family is a family value. There's no question about it. That is the toughest thing a man could do, incidentally. I would tell you that right now. I don't care what you do. You ask any man who's done anything in the world. The toughest act on earth is sticking it out with your family, your wife and your kids for your whole life. Try that one. And then get back to me when you're older, man. Say, well, is it really worth it if it's that hard? I'll let you decide. I'll let you decide. It seems to have worked from the beginning of time until now. Okay, I know you want to rewrite everything because you're so cool. I realize that. Everything is a post this and pre that and pre-constructionism and after post-constructionism. And I went to Harvard. I'm so intelligent. I know what the hell I'm talking about. Post this and post taste that in America. They don't know what they're talking about. Okay? Seems to have worked from the beginning of time. The father sticking around for his entire life raising children. Doesn't work anymore, though. In fact, most men don't even want to have children. Most women, I don't know. You take a look at the Caucasian race in particular. I mean, you want to lay it on the line? You want to get down to statistics? You want to talk about replacement values in terms of families and by nation? I have it in my head. Virtually every European nation will be gone within 50 years because the replacement rate of children is below that necessary to replace the two people in that marriage. If you have only 1.2 children on average, you're not going to replace that two people who had the child. And so you look at the countries and you see nations filled with beautiful women and handsome men, and they're all so beautiful and so narcissistic and so driven with a desire to be Hollywood that they can't get married because no one's good enough for them. And also they want to have fun and they don't want to ruin their bodies. They don't want to ruin their bodies? Go take a look at Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills to see what old women look like with surgery. Or take a look at the old men on Rodeo Drive with the, or Palm Beach. You want to go to a place where the men are 90, where they've had so many skin grafts and surgeries, they think they're handsome? It's shocking. I'd rather see an old man with a droopy face, but that's a little off the topic. So what am I talking about here? I don't know, maybe a lot of different things. Maybe I'm just venting about society and the lack of leadership from the political class with regard to the cohesiveness of the family and how essential it is to the survival of a nation. You know, the family is the brick of a society. You break that brick, society crumbles. Now, why has family crumbled? Well, you can blame many different factors, right? Many, right? However, if you haven't read Karl Marx, you don't understand that it's all part of a long march through this society. Karl Marx wrote that the bourgeois family is the greatest stumbling block towards a new socialist world order. I'm paraphrasing right now. Karl Marx wrote that because I read Das Kapital in college on my own. He defined the family, the bourgeois family, as property, as ownership. This is something that the radical feminists still profess to the poor children who are subjected to their lies in colleges. And that the bourgeois family must be destroyed to bring about the most perfect workers' union. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back to continue my discussion of family values right here on the Savage Nation. Savage. And God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And so we're talking about family. What is a family? Man and woman and children. The period. End of story. End of story, beginning and the end. So I'm asking you, you know, I could make it political, which party better defends such family values and how, and you know it's the Republicans, even though I'm not a registered Republican, I'm a registered independent, have been for, I don't know, 15, 18 years, I believe. There's no question that Democrats are an anti-family party. There's no question about it. Now, they would argue, oh, the opposite is true. Now, remember what I said to you at the beginning of the show. Lawyers are now primarily who our legislators are. Our president is a lawyer, not for the first time, but hopefully for the last time we will have a lawyer as president, because lawyers are trained to parse the truth and to deceive people. If law schools teach people anything, it is how to lie to people. How to deceive them, how to trick them. They certainly don't teach you to pursue honesty, do they? As I learned a long time ago, the chasm between truth and justice is almost infinite. But nevertheless, you're not going to expect your politicians to talk about families. But the Democrat politicians especially are liars when it comes to family values. And they would argue that by expanding the welfare state, by taking more from those who create and give more to those who do nothing for this society, they are actually the party of family values, because they had an old phrase, to help the most helpless. I used to love that one. That's how they started to build a welfare state in the 60s and 70s. A just society is built about the principle of helping the most defenseless. Sounds good on paper. Now wake up to a bankrupt nation. Bankrupt nation. Everyone has their hand out. They're all helpless. From the faker with a blue disability card in her windshield, taking the spot for the truly handicapped and running into a restaurant to fill her fat face with food, which makes me crazy, because the truly handicapped should be helped in our society, not the fakers who have lawyers for friends who get them the blue disability plaque. I used to go up to them and say, you don't look disabled to me. Right where they get the cane, or they grab their, oh, the back hurts them. You should go up to anyone with a disability sign that pops out of a car and say, you don't look disabled to me, I'm going to report you. See what happens. You know, we have the power as people to stop a lot of things. You could start it on a simple level. Start with those fakers. We see them every day. Handicap zones, disabled zones, whatever they want to call it, you know, politically appropriate phrase. And they pull in, zip out. They put the sign up, and right away they're in the front of the line. 99% of them are Democrats. 99% of them are liberal Democrats who are for the raising the taxes on the rich, you know, helping the poor, immigrant, blah, blah, blah. They got the cane in the car, the fake cane. Oh, the arthritis acted up. So you could do a lot of things. You could start at a very local level with that. But so which party is better for the family? Now I want to open it up to another discussion related to this. If you've been married for a long period of time and you stayed with a spouse who cheated on you, A, did you? And B, how did you do that? How do you live with that? Have you? I don't think anyone talks about it. I'm starting to sound like a daytime talk show. It doesn't bother me. To me, it's more interesting than talking about Newt Gingrich's waistline or Mitt Romney's tax returns or Ron Paul's lack of neurons. I mean, you know, any one of those topics would be maybe of some interest to you. It was a funny joke I said last Friday as the show closed, which was it's Gingrich by a gut, Romney trailing by a silver spoon, Santorum is behind by one vest, and in last place trailing behind is Ron Paul trailing by several neurons. I thought it was very clever. Jonathan Swift would be very happy to have heard that one, but apparently wasn't heard by enough people because no one stole it yet. Apparently hasn't been stolen yet, so I don't think too many people heard it. You want to talk about that? Your cheating heart? Did you stay with a cheater? Why and how? How do you live with it afterwards? How do you trust that party? You know, it's like saying, oh, you lied then, but you're not lying now. You cheated then, but you're not cheating now. Do they stop? Can you trust a cheater? Do they ever stop, or is it in their nature? I mean, this is an intriguing question. Now, of course, we now get into the whole issue of defining marriage and defining marriage in this time, in this place, in this country, because marriage was not always defined in this manner. You want to start defining marriage, you go back to ancient Rome, where sleeping with other women and other men, if you were a man, was actually apparently par for the course. Or go back to ancient Greece and move yourself forward. So I don't know which society you come from or which society you're in, but right now we're here. It's 2012. It's the Savage Nation. It's about a few minutes until the hour, and I'll be back in just a few minutes to continue to take your calls right here on Family Values.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Payoffs on these public investments don't always come right away. Some technologies don't pan out. Some companies fail.
You made me cry when you said goodbye.
All right, there's no hidden message in the song as a, you know, juxtaposed to Obama's statements. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. The one topic that Obama did not touch on, nor do any of the other candidates for that matter, is character or family values. Now, I was talking about family values in the last hour. It's a phrase from the Reagan era, and it's a good phrase, but it got dropped because of fear of certain demographics and certain pressure groups. They don't like the word family or values connected. You could say family but not values, and you could say values but not family in the same phrase. But now they've changed it to the word character. And, of course, the greatest character in the debates is Newt Gingrich, who is a disgrace to the Republican Party and to conservatives. I found an article that I'm going to tie into this discussion right now by R. Emmett Terrell that was just published in the New York Sun. William Jefferson Gingrich, he calls it. And here's what he writes. How long have I been saying it? At least for 15 years, but in private I've been aware of it longer. Newt Gingrich is conservatism's Bill Clinton, but without the charm. He has acquired wit, but he has all the charm of barbed wire. Newt and Bill are 1960s generation narcissists, he writes, and they share the same problems, waywardness and deviancy. Newt, like Bill, has a proclivity for girl hopping. It is not as egregious as Bill's, but then Newt is not as drop-dead beautiful. His public record is already besmeared with tawdry divorces, and there are private encounters with the fair sex that doubtless will come out, huh, Nancy? If I have heard of some, you can be sure the Democrats have heard of more. Nancy Pelosi's intimations are timely. Newt up against the prophet Obama would be a painful thing to watch. He might be deft with one-liners, but it would be futile. There are independent and other uncommitted voters to be cultivated in 2012. All would be unmoved by Newt's juggling of conservative shibboleths. Newt and Bill, as 1960s generation self-promoters, share the same duplicity, ostentatious braininess, a propensity for endless scrapes with propriety and the law. They are tireless hustlers. Now, Newt is hustling my fellow conservatives in this election. The last time around, he successfully hustled conservatives in the House of Representatives and then the conservatives on the House Impeachment Committee. He blew the impeachment and, in fact, his role as Speaker. He backed out in disgrace. Now he has found his key for hustling conservative electorate. He is playing the liberal media card and saying he embodies conservative values. Like Bill with his credulous fans, Newt is hoping conservatives suffer amnesia. Possibly some do. Perhaps they cannot recall mere months ago when this insufferable whiz kid was lambasting the great Congressman Paul Ryan for, quote, right-wing social engineering. More evidence of Newt's not-so-hidden longing for the approval of the liberal media. After his Ryan moment, Newt's campaign was a death wagon, and it will be so again, hopefully before he gets the nomination. Conservatives should not climb onto his death wagon. He is a huckster, and I, for one, will not be rendered a contortionist trying to defend him. I did so in his earliest days and learned my lesson. This is R. Emmett Terrell. Let's see, a few more lines or paragraphs from this incredible article. I like this one, and I don't know which parts of it you would like to hear. Here we go. After Newt's and Bill's disastrous experiences in government, both went on to create empires. Bill in philanthropy and cheap thought, Newt in public policy and cheap thought. As an ex-president, Bill has rung up an unprecedented $75.6 million since absconding from the White House with White House loot and shameless pardons. I do not know how much Newt has amassed, but he got between 1.6 and 1.8 mil from Freddie Mac and lobbied for Medicare Part B, while receiving, according to the Examiner's Tim Carney, big bucks pushing corporate welfare. Now, after a lifetime in Washington, he is promoting himself as an outsider. And then he goes into the contenders against him. And obviously, he says that they're pretty good. And I don't want to go into the, you can read the article yourself. And let's see what else. Conservatives should not be surprised by the scandals that lie ahead if they stick with Gingrich. Those of us who raised the question of character in 1992 were confronted by an indignant Bill Clinton treating the topic as a low blow. To listen to him, character was the C word of American politics. It was reprehensible to mention it. By now we know character matters. Paul, Santorum, and Romney have it. Newt has Clinton's character. That's from R. Emmett Terrell. It's a very well-written article, and it's absolutely right on the money. And I now switch back to the topic of family values and character and ask, which party better defends family values, and how do they do so? Then I asked you, is marriage still a valid institution? If you've been married for over 5 or 10 years to the same person, call the show and tell listeners why it's worth staying in the same marriage so young people can get something positive out of a radio show, as opposed to the negative that comes out of the campaigns and out of Washington in general. And then I opened it up to another line of discussion on the Savage Nation, which I'll introduce again, which is, if you've been in a marriage where there's been cheating, how have you stayed in that marriage? How did you do it? Has it, you know, did you live with it? And how? Which now brings us to the first caller of this hour out of Las Vegas. Where else? John. I guess what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas, except right now. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Savage. Actually, my point is that the person who is forgiven in a marriage usually finds it harder to deal with the forgiveness than the person who forgave.
That's very interesting. So let's see if we can make that simpler for the people who need translations. You don't care to talk about that personally, do you?
Not at all.
Okay, so let's say a man finds that his wife's been running around on the side, but he still loves her, and he says, honey, come home, and I forgive you. So it's easier for the man to forgive than for the woman to forgive herself, is what you're saying. Is that correct?
I don't believe it has anything to do with gender or sex. I think it's just a matter of the point.
No, I'm saying, but look, so reverse it. A woman finds out her husband's been cheating. She forgives him. and she says, come home, I'll forgive you. So it's easier for her than for him?
It's easier for him than it is for her. Because the party that's forgiven, because there's so little true forgiveness. I mean, when you're forgiven, when you forgive somebody, you have to forgive them all the way. It can't be part and parcel, because then it becomes a manipulation thing.
What do you mean by forgive them all the way? Explain that to the audience. They may not understand that.
You have to forgive them from your heart. You have to forgive. It's forgive. It's to give. It's to give this forgiveness, this release. You have to do that in its completeness in order for it to be true and in order for it to ring with positive results. Often at times, the person who is forgiven, because there's such a lack of forgiveness in its true form in the world, finds it very difficult to believe that it's even true. And that becomes a negative on their part, even though it's a positive in its entirety. And it becomes a difficult thing wherein, like in my particular example, it culminated into years of being tested on my being able to forgive, or the party that forgave being tested by the party who's been forgiven as to whether or not the forgiveness has been true and real.
Wow. Well, I think what you're saying is obviously correct for those who are listening who understand what you're saying. It's not easy for the average person to catch this, but I think there's another element to this whole forgive and forgiven thing, which is that although a person may forgive the other party, they never forget it. And if they never forget it, they've not truly forgiven. Isn't that correct?
Well, it all depends on whether or not your forgiveness is, like they say, to err is human and to forgive is divine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, well, but they can't forget it. That cheating thing is something that's basic to the human animal. And they never, I don't think people ever forget that. And they have this imagery that they carry with them, and it eats them alive, and it poisons the relationship forever, I think, don't you?
Well, yes, it can if you allow it. But if you realize, if the person who forgave realizes that what they did at that moment in time was from their heart and true, then they will protect themselves against the thoughts by creating as close as possible the relationship that they had up until that point. And they actually become defensive of their own forgiving as opposed to the other person being forgiven. And it's just, and I go through this on a daily basis, because when the other party brings up the testing, that's when it usually comes to the surface again. And I have to say to myself, well, you know, she's feeling insecure about this, and I can do one of two things. I can either attack her for not accepting my forgiveness or for saying something stupid, or I can just let it go, which is what you have to do, because that's what you did in the first place.
John, without divulging too much of your personal life, what field of work are you in?
I drive a truck.
No, that's okay. I mean, listening to you, I wouldn't have known what you did. I would not have known. You could have told me you were a psychologist. You could have said you were any number of professions with a heavy New York kind of truck driver accent. See, I'm not thrown off by accents. I listen to a person's phraseology and their use of words. And so you're a very intelligent man who's thought a great deal about many things, not just about love and marriage. I can hear that.
That is correct, sir.
You know, people misunderstand that. People very often underestimate the next man. I have found that my entire life. And they'll often judge a person based upon his height, his weight, his clothing, his race, his accent. Okay, that's part of the human condition. That's why they say, you know, clothing makes the man, all right, or whatever. You know, you put a man into a $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 suit and get his hair done, people might start to think that he's, you know, a politician at that point. But they will definitely believe him more, wouldn't they?
Yeah. No, I've thought about them a lot, too, you know. But no, actually, I'm an artist. And because I'm a starving artist, I have had to find a way of employment. And driving a truck, which I did cross-country for quite a while, actually helped me to cement my ability to communicate with people on all different levels.
Amazing. What kind of art do you, John? What kind of art do you do?
I do mostly watercolor. That's really my thing, because the oils were too expensive at one particular point of time in my life. And
now, you see, you listen to this. Is that a New York accent?
Yeah, I was born in Mashpee, Queens. I was raised in Brooklyn.
See? All right, so now you listen to this guy with this New York accent, truck driver. Who would have ever think he paints watercolors, right? There's another bias, inherently, because you don't sound like an artist, John. You don't have the effeteness of an artist who lives in San Francisco.
Well, I'm so sad, Mr. Savage. I'm so sad.
John, I wish I could send you anything other than a thank you, but I can only send you a thank you right now. Unless you want a copy of Abuse of Power, I'll get you one of those.
That would be absolutely sweet.
Beautiful. John, stay in the line. I'll get my publisher to send you a copy of my smash bestseller, exciting, can't put it down, novel Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You talked about character, family values. Here's Newt Gingrich, who never misses an opportunity to appear alongside his ex-mistress, current wife, Calista. Okay? Why do we never see Romney appearing with his wife and children and grandchildren? Why are we always feasting upon Newt's mistress wife? Why? Well, what's this about? How does he stage this so well, where none of the other candidates are ever seen with their, you know, spouses? Whatever. I mean, it's an interesting question to me. Here's on the Drudge Report. Gingrich pulls ad after Rubio dubs it inflammatory. Gingrich repeatedly insulted Ronald Reagan. Warren Buffett's secretary makes between $200,000 and $500,000 per year, just bought second home. You hear this? Warren Buffett's secretary, Mr. Nice Guy, makes between $200,000 and $500,000 per year. I wonder what she pays in taxes. If she uses the Warren Buffett model, probably 15%, probably, if it's investment income. It's not straight income. If she uses the General Electric model, she pays no taxes. She could say that she earned it in Switzerland and it was sent to her here, and the money was really earned in Switzerland while she was studying Swiss cooking. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There are many other topics we can talk about, but I'm going to stick with this one. Alabama Billy, you're up. Go ahead on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I left my cheating wife, and I believe innocence once lost can never be regained.
That's quite succinct. How long ago did this tragedy occur?
2007 on 9/11.
Do you regret having left her?
No, I regret losing my child, though. The family court is just totally against the man.
Yes, it's corrupt. It's run by radical, man-hating individuals.
Yeah,
and always sees the woman. Always sees the woman as the victim and the man as the predator. It's a psychotic group of individuals, family court. So the purpose of your call is to just say you left her, period. You didn't want to stay with her, and that's a good decision.
Yeah, it is, but it's hurt me because I get my daughter four times a month, and she gets her for weeks on end. And I don't think
would you then argue, or would you accept the argument that in some cases it's worth staying in a bad marriage for the sake of the children?
That's a tough question, Michael.
It is a very tough question because many marriages are not good marriages. They're very poor marriages, and yet people have stuck them out, and they did it originally for the sake of the children. They didn't get along. One cheated. One did this. One was a bum. The other one was a runaround, a slacker. And they said, well, we're going to stick it out for the children. That's the way it used to be talked about. Then others came along and said, no, the children shouldn't be around such a toxic relationship. They're better off if you divorce. It's an intriguing question of what is better for children. I don't have an answer. I think it depends upon the children and the parents. You know, the structure of the family is quite important to a child. We know that. Even a dysfunctional family is better than no family at all in most cases. By the way, a dysfunctional family. I love that phrase.
Savage.
Yeah, It is the Savage Nation. Strangely enough, during the break, I was on a website which described the best prisons to go to in the United States of America. The best places to go to prison. FPC Alderson, West Virginia, a standalone prison camp in West Virginia for females, home to Martha Stewart when she served 5 months for lying to investigators about a stock sale. You hear what they sent her to prison for? She went to jail for 5 months for lying to investigators about a stock sale. I mean, by that definition, the entire Democrat Party would be in a federal lockup. It's unbelievable to me. But anyway, you look at these places. Who knew they existed? What a world. Morgantown, 1,299 prisoners. Minimum security. Inmates can actually go out of the prison and interact with the community. Who knew that there were prisons like this? FPC Yankton, Yankton, South Dakota. The standalone federal prison camp is in downtown South Dakota. It was once a college campus. Inmates have the opportunity to leave the prison site and go into the community for volunteering for local nonprofits. Oh, by God. Such as Habitat for Humanity. Good luck. Yeah, I wonder what else they do while they're at the old Habitat. The inmate and charity must be approved. Approved, yeah. I smear off a guard, you get approved. Approved, yeah. Okay, sure, the governor approved it. Let him go from Yankton to the Habitat for Humanity. Make sure no one's in the room while he's there. Here's FPC Pensacola. This federal prison camp is also on a military base. Florida's Pensacola Naval Air Station. I think this prison was in the Godfather in one of them. Inmates have jobs inside and outside the camp and can interact with military personnel. Interact. All right, I'll take three Valium. I'll take six OxyContin. Get me a bag of dope and get me two cases of scotch. Inmates may also take part in activities such as movie nights. That's really relevant in an age like today. Intramural sports. That would be betting, no doubt. Dog bet, track betting, whatever. Racquetball and bocce ball. I wonder why there's bocce ball. Can anyone figure out why there's bocce ball in this federal prison? I mean, come on. You could read these things, and each thing provokes interesting responses inside a human being. Here's another wonderful place to go to prison. FPC Montgomery, Alabama. Federal prison camp Montgomery, Alabama is a Maxwell Air Force Base. While inmates can enjoy the music room, pool tables, and a craft room, the best perk is the opportunity to work outside the prison camp. Inmates are employed as gardeners and landscapers on the military base. Okay. That's not open to any potential cheating, of course, of any kind whatsoever. All right, so there's the whole system. If you've ever wondered what prison life is like for white-collar criminals, such as Bernie Madoff, or how Martha Stewart got through her time in prison, I guess that may have helped you a little bit. But, you know, I read a book last week by Beowulf. Who was his name? I forgot. I was telling about him before. Jack Abramoff. And it was an interesting book. I didn't think I wanted to read it. I'm going to get him on the show this week. Abramoff was the top lobbyist in the United States of America and deeply connected to the Republican Party at that. Of course, this is not to say that the Republican Party is the only party influenced by lobbyists, but this man was way up there, okay? He knew everyone. He knew all of them. Pictures with the top guys. Yet, he took a fall. I forget exactly on what charge. They threw the book at him, and he tumbled from the heights to a federal prison. So you say, all right, so it was probably an easy stint. I could not believe what I read in this book, what the guards did to him in that prison, how they abused him mentally. I could not believe it. In one case, Abramoff, who was a religious Jew, by the way, for whatever that means for him, it's his business, it's him with God, not me nor you to judge, asked for a Bible in the prison, a Christian Bible, to be given to a fellow inmate, I think a Nigerian, an African, who knew he was into religion and said, could you get me a Christian Bible? So it's Abramoff orders the Bible comes, he leaves the Bible on a shelf in the prison for the other inmate, and he's then punished into solitary confinement. And he asks, wait a minute, what for? For passing contraband goods to another inmate. He said, but I only ordered him a Bible. I didn't even touch it. They said, it doesn't matter. You violated the rules of the prison. They put him in solitary confinement. Abramoff said at the hearing to them, the last time I heard about this type of behavior was in the ex-Soviet Union, where people were punished for passing out Bibles. So if you think that our prisons are a cakewalk for prisoners, you're out of your mind. And if you think that everyone who goes to one of these white-collar prisons is having a good time, I think you really need to read that book in particular. What an eye-opener. Everyone says, oh, what fun it would be. I wouldn't have any problems. I'd have friends. I could do bowling, and I get art therapy, and every day is building up my self-esteem and good doctor care, medical care, dental care. Nonsense. Nonsense. In some ways, our prisons are worse than the Soviet Union. I once saw a show on prisons in the Ukraine. They looked like they were treated better there than here in some cases. Don't get me wrong. Don't think I'm tilting towards the prisoner now, but things are not often as clear as you may think they are. There's a lot more to be discovered in that area. And I think it's a topic for another time. When we get Jack on, we can talk about prisons and treatment in such white-collar campuses, so to speak. Connecticut, Marilyn, she survived cheating. She's on the Savage Nation. Marilyn, tell your story.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I believe that you stay in a marriage not for your children's sake, but because you want to recapture and go back to the reason why you got married in the first place.
So in your case, I'm going to say what it says on the screen. You married 26 years and you survived cheating. By whom? You or him?
No, my husband. My husband cheated on me.
And what? I don't want to delve into it and make it into a joke. It was once or many times?
He had an affair for a year and found out we had an incident in our home and where we had a boiler putback. Long story short, we had to leave our house and live out of our home for 6 months while our home was being repaired.
I don't understand. Wait, you're mixing me up in a way. What does the boiler and the house have to do with the affair?
This is how I found out about the affair. And it was just one of those things that God...
You're carrying this in your head, honest to God. If it's of any relevance to this, how did you find out he was cheating because you left the house?
Because I found it. I found a text.
All right, so you found that he had an affair. He was screwing around another woman. This went on for a year. Then what? Hell broke loose. And then what?
Then I had to make a decision. And whether or not I wanted to continue to be in this marriage and whether or not the past 25 years mattered and meant anything. And when it came right down to it, we went to see our priest.
Do you trust him? Do you still trust him after that? Did you trust him after that? And do you or can you still trust him after that?
It's been a year since I found out about.
It's fresh. This is a fresh wound. This is not like 10 years ago and you're living sort of happily ever after.
Correct. No, this has it's relatively fresh. It'll be 1 year since when I found the text.
So you're still watching him like a hawk.
To a certain degree, I feel some of the trust has come back. It's going to take a long time for the rest of the trust to come back. But
did it interfere with the intimacy between yourself and your husband?
No. Sometimes it does, because sometimes what the other gentleman, the truck driver, was saying, it's hard to forget.
It is
hard to forget, but I made a decision and a commitment a long time ago to this man and to my son. And...
Well, I can hear you're in pain. I mean, there's no question you're suffering from this, and it's a burden. And, it's still a fresh wound, and there's little anyone can say about it other than what you just said, which is that you were married for 26 years, you found out he was messing around, you are still with him, and you did so because you're committed to the marriage and to him.
And to a certain degree, I have to accept responsibility for my part in the deterioration of our marriage.
Oh, now wait a minute. That sounds like a therapist talking.
No. We have seen no therapist. We tried. Nobody wanted to talk to us.
That's funny. Well, wait a minute. But where did you take the burden upon yourself that you caused him to cheat?
I didn't cause him to cheat. I accept responsibility for certain things happening in our marriage because I stopped being his best friend. I don't deserve what he did to me as a result mm-hmm. of that because we both failed in the marriage.
Right. Let's say if you were a 22-year-old, if there was a 22-year-old person, 25-year-old listening to this show, would you recommend marriage and why?
Absolutely.
What's in it then? What's in it for people?
The love that you have with your husband or your wife, that bond is so special, which is why it hurts so much when it's broken, which is why it's so devastating when that's broken. But I would tell people that kids, you know.
All right. Well, this is a woman, Marilyn, bless you for calling, and I mean that. You've got a long road ahead, and you've got a good heart, and you deserve the best and the best happiness. But this is difficult. Let's see. What do we have here? Married 31 years, disagree but not disrespect. This is interesting. Georgia, Kathy, you're up on the Savage Nation. It's Women's Hour on the Savage Nation. Tell us your story.
My husband and I celebrated our 31st wedding anniversary last month. And it hasn't always been easy. There's a lot of rough patches in the road. But we both value the institution of marriage. And that's why, despite our differences now and then, we have stayed together. We love each other deep down. We respect each other. And just like anyone else, married or not, we have grown and changed over the years. And I would recommend to anyone who is a young person or any age contemplating marriage that they look at it as a long-term relationship. And I think part of the problem with the high divorce rate is that a lot of people don't see it that way. They're too interested in right here, right now. They're too interested in a big, splashy wedding when actually a wedding is just the beginning of what ought to be a long-term mm-hmm. relationship. And I think my advice for young people or anyone who's not married but would like to get married are two bits of advice, one from Aristotle and one from Shakespeare. Aristotle said, know thyself, and Shakespeare said, to thine own self be true, thus thou canst be false to any man or a woman. And
Kathy, this is an amazing call because you punctuated your insights with philosophy and philosophers. Again, I'm always amazed at the caller level on the Savage Nation. And thank you again. I have to stick by my words that I have the most literate audience in AM radio. I don't think anyone could challenge that. And I say that for a reason. And the reason is this is what keeps me interested in this show. I never know what people are going to say. I never know who they are, where they are, what part of the country they're from, what station they're on. They impress me, and I'm sure they impress the listeners on the program. Before I take this final break of this hour, I have something I'm going to throw out. I'm in a strange stage of my life. Something new is going to occur. I know that. And I've been thinking about, I'm thinking about doing something in addition to radio. And one of the things I'm thinking of doing is somehow being able to perform weddings for people, marriages. I mean, if a ship captain could do it, I can do it. And if people go to, you know, they go members of churches, you can become an official who can marry people. I think that there are lots of people listening to this show who know lots of people. I can't. How many can I do? I mean, I want to be around happy things. I'd like to marry people. I'd like to be able to bring people together and give them a little savage advice for the future. What do you think of that idea? Should I go down that road, or is that another one of my pipe dreams? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill.
to Savage Nation. Whether you found your thrill on Blueberry Hill or in the backseat of a car, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We are talking about amazing topic. Nobody would have expected this today, but I had reached a point where I wouldn't really want to deal with the politics much anymore. Everyone I know who I talk to is fed up with the Gingrich, Romney, Gingrich, and they know that this is a destructive campaign by Newt Gingrich on behalf of the Democrats. Whether he is overtly acting on behalf of the Democrats or covertly doesn't really matter. He fundamentally is working for the Obama regime, because if he destroys Romney any further, weakens him any further, it will be him versus Obama, and he loses by, I would estimate, oh, he'd get 32% of the vote, and Obama would win in one of the greatest landslides in history if this retread was ever allowed to steal the Republican nomination. But that's the nature of the business. So that's why I went into the family values character, because it's not being discussed very much, and I think it needs to be discussed. Travis in Sacramento, welcome from KSTE. You are on the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that amazing idea for you to marry people. You know, you said it yourself that the marriage is a very important thing. It's a sacred bond between two people that love each other, man and woman, of course. And I think that's a phenomenal idea. Matter of fact,
I'd have to look into what kind of certificate I'd have to get to make it a valid marriage in the state in which I would be doing it. But I'm wondering how many people would be interested in such a thing. I mean, you know, you get a, let's say you get a reverend or a priest or a rabbi to do it. You don't know them, and by and large, and they read from a script. They have a script. They put in a name. What if you had somebody like me who can really give an inspirational speech in a marriage that could last a lifetime? You know, that would give me a new lease on life in many ways, to set people off on a road and then wonder about them, like where they are, and keep in touch with them. It'd be a phenomenal thing, and to go to all these happy events. Plus, I love to eat. Jay in Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'd be honored, Dr. Savage, if you were there when my wife and I renewed our marriage vows.
You know that that's an entirely another, a great other area, that if I do go down this road, I could renew marriage vows for people who are married many years. That would be something, the silver and the gold, that kind of wedding anniversary. But instead of traveling around the country sort of like an itinerant preacher, maybe I should set up like a Las Vegas chapel where you come to the Savage Chapel for the renewal. How's that?
Well, as much as we love you, we would come to you.
You know, I want something dynamic and new in my life, and I don't want to just open a restaurant or a bar. I'm thinking of something fundamentally more important and meaningful than that. What could be more meaningful than marrying people and then staying in touch with them, you know? And I don't know, just an idea. I mean, I'm thinking of a lot of things, because I got to tell you something. Talk radio, focusing so much on politics, can get very negative. There's no question about it. When you are constantly looking at the negatives of our society, which is inevitable if you're studying the political disease, and the low ratings of the lawyers who are running America. Let's not forget why this country has sunk to its new low. It's because lawyers have invaded the political class to an extent never before seen, nor anticipated by our founding fathers. Now, you can't pass a law banning lawyers from Congress, but on the other hand, something's got to give here, because they're trained in lying, they're trained in deceiving, they're trained in defeating the other man. They're not trained in anything else. Therefore, the country is sinking as a result. That is why we have perennial warfare. And moreover, we now have a lawyer for president. Not for the first time, but let's hope for the last time. Romney, I don't think, is a lawyer. Okay? And the last thing we need is another smart-aleck lawyer.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. here's what's on michaelsavage.com. All the stories that have made it to the page today include Obama calls for raising taxes, not on General Electric, which pays none, not on Microsoft, which pays none, so far as we know, not on Warren Buffett's income, so far as we know, but raising taxes on anyone else who doesn't contribute to him, I suppose. On the top right, we ask, was Newt's victory in the Carolinas a real surge of the voters, popularity, or faulty voting machines controlled by a Spanish firm? More Americans renounced their U.S. citizenship over taxes last year, 1,000 more. SEALs to the rescue. The unit killed 9 Somali pirates in a nighttime helicopter raid, which rescued 2 hostages. Bless the SEALs. Gingrich says Pelosi's comments are hysterical.
You know, I sometimes think there's almost a level of hysteria about the prospect of somebody who really wants to change Washington winning the presidency. And I've watched the last few weeks as my campaign has gotten stronger. The attacks have become more hysterical and more factually incorrect. And I have a simple challenge for Speaker Pelosi. They'll put up or shut up. I mean, I have no idea what she's talking about. I don't think she has any idea what she's talking about. But bring it on. My life has been looked at by lots of people, and I've been around a long time. And I just think that when you're a left-wing Democrat, the prospect of a Gingrich presidency is really sort of like a nightmare. And they're right. I mean, my goal is to go to Washington to change it, not just to get along with the old order.
Mayor Strangeberg in New York blasts the police use of a jihad movie. The film accuses Muslim extremists of posing as moderates. What's wrong with that, Bloomy? A no-camping law is to be enforced to get rid of the bums in the Occupy D.C. movement. Solar storm brought visual fireworks to Earth. Warren Buffett, Mr. Nice Guy. Well, apparently he cleans up after having Obama kill the Keystone Pipeline. You see, 3/4 of the oil coming out of Canada is transported by his railroad, Burlington Northern. See how things work? Returns show that Romney paid $3 million in taxes. Soros makes another fortune in MF bonds, supports the Arab winter, and sees class warfare coming to America's streets. Nice guy, huh? Newt's billionaire benefactor to drop another $5 million in Newt's pocket. That's the gambling tycoon from Vegas. The wife of the Italian ship captain is mad at the media. She said he's not a bad guy. Here's another article. Barack Obama is the food stamp president. And down on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, Obama snubbed by Stanley Cup MVP goalie. Member of Saudi royal family entourage raped a barmaid. He lured 2 young bartenders in Manhattan to his room. Teen admits role in 11-year-old's gang rape. He's among 20 suspects. Liam Neeson considers converting to Islam. Oh, God. There goes all of his movies. Scores of whales die on New Zealand beach. You want to have your heart broken today if it's not bad enough? Take a look at the pilot whales crying in the sand, beached in New Zealand. Oh, boy. All this and more on michaelsavage.com. Here's the latest news. The worst Treasury secretary in history, Geithner, says he's finished. He doesn't expect President Obama to ask him to stay in office if he's reelected. So thank God Geithner will go back to doing something useful now. No doubt he can get a nice job working for Freddie or Fannie, or perhaps even the Newt Gingrich campaign. You never know where he may wind up. Here's some questions for the Savage Nation. Reports have come out stating that all the results of the Republican primary were processed through the foreign-owned election software company SCYTL. Days before the primary in the Carolinas, Gingrich was trailing Romney by 10 points. Remember Gingrich trailing Romney by 10 points? But suddenly on election night, Gingrich beat Romney by over 10 points. Do you believe that South Carolina's election was rigged? If you think it was rigged, who do you think is behind it? Question, did you bother watching the State of the Union speech last night? Or have you completely tuned out political TV? Obama announced last night that the Navy SEALs rescued a U.S. hostage from Somalia. Are you upset that for the second time now, Obama has stolen the glory of the Navy SEALs for his own political advancement? Huh. I've been telling you for months now that the endless Republican debates do nothing but give the left-wing media a chance to cut down the Republican candidates. Even dumb John McCain is now saying that there have been too many Republican debates, and they've been damaged. Ha! Huh. Finally woke up. You agree?
I think there should be a limited number of debates. The purpose originally of debates were to give the candidates a chance to expose their agenda and view for the future of America, what they would do as president. Now they are deteriorating, obviously, into serious personal attacks. And what that does, it drives up the disapproval rating of the people who are in these debates, thereby harming their ability, whichever one wins, and very damaging in the general election. This thing drags out for months with these kinds of debates. It's going to make it all the more difficult for that, for the nominee to prevail. And it's really unfortunate that it's deteriorated. And frankly, the media looks for the gotcha moment or the attack moment rather than, frankly, the view that and agenda that the candidates have for the presidency and for the country.
Sergeant Frank Wooderich will get 3 months in the brig for the Haditha case, acquitted of manslaughter charges but convicted of dereliction of duty. Remember the Haditha case? You think that this is a fair judgment?
In a 2006 nationwide study of voting age citizens by the Brennan Center for Justice of the New York University School of Law found that African Americans are more than three times as likely as Caucasians to lack a government-issued ID. The sacred and simple act of being able to vote by a person of your choosing causes the ire of so many state legislatures who, after the 2010 election and the misrepresentation that there was fraud in the 2008 election, maybe because we elected the first African-American president.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com.
Savage.
Minnesota, Margaret, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm calling in response to your question about rechanneling the energy, good or bad. I feel most alive when I have a paintbrush in my hand. I've been painting Lake Superior because of the tumultuous nature of the lake itself, and I find a lot of solace in applying my energy towards something that could be long-lasting, could be an heirloom someday. If not, whatever. It's more about the process. I made 30 paintings.
Okay, but no, this is very important. But did you originally pick up a paintbrush because you are wrestling with this issue?
No, it's my nature. I wrote poetry as a child and doodled around. And when I was a young adult, I went skydiving and I wanted extreme adrenaline. And then I'm a grandma. So I've painted more recently as I've slowed down, as I mature. But I've been prone to painting, but I've more so in the last 5 years.
I understand. See, I myself have. You want to hear something funny? You look back on your life, you say, what did you want to do that you didn't do? There are many times in my life I've tried to paint and I can't. There are things I've tried to do that I just can't do well, so I don't do them. I know that I don't have talent in that area. I could make horrendous paintings. I mean, I've gotten the brushes out and there were times, but they're no good. I don't want to do anything that's not good. So that's interesting. So others would say, well, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, do it anyway. Well, take a look at the Brooklyn Museum. You'll see how that works out. Take a look at what's going on in the art departments and universities today, where they've encouraged kids who really have no talent whatsoever to believe that because they smear paint on a canvas that it's an art. Or take a look at what the Obamas just with their poetry at the White House. It was not poetry. Nothing is gibberish. But they think because they tell someone they just write what enters their mind that it's art. It's not art. It's dreck in plain English. Pauline in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I wish I had the hypersexuality problem. Basically, I would direct it right towards my husband.
You direct it towards your husband?
Yes.
But you're saying you don't have any other impulses, though, other than he?
No. We had a good relationship, and then menopause hit, and it destroyed me.
And so what about him? Did
problem,
he did? But no, that's an interesting. It's nothing to joke about. I mean, you could turn it into a joke and ha-ha, but the man has the outlet through sexual enhancement drugs like Viagra. Is that what happened?
No, he's okay. I'm the one with the problem, and we never had a problem until menopause hit me. And just for the pharmaceutical companies, they're always going after the guys like, okay, here's the blue pill. There's like a lot of gals out here that are waiting for the pink pill.
But maybe you don't need it. Did you ever think that this is nature's way of giving you a rest finally from that frenzy? Isn't that a beautiful thing to feel? Not to
no,
be driven like that?
I don't want that. I want to be back with my husband the way I used to.
I see. Okay, well, that's another story. A lot of people would say, thank God they don't feel it anymore. Doesn't mean that they stopped living. Yet I know people who are very old who have never lost the urge. So what are you going to do about it? Jeremy, you've been holding on WTNT in Washington. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your story.
Just in response to channeling sexual energy, Savage, I'm 25 years old, and I take a lot of that energy, and I weightlift. I bodybuild. I'm not professional. I'm quite amateur, but, doing that.
Now this is very important, and again, not a joke, not meant to be a joke. Are you consciously sublimating sexual energy into the bodybuilding?
Not all the time, but yeah, sometimes I'm.
In other words, let's say you're going crazy, you're dying to be with a woman, and you don't have a girl, whatever. What do you run to the gym?
No. When I can, I go. I'm married. My wife and I have a 3-year-old daughter, so we can't always just jump in the bed, whenever.
Oh yeah. Well, once you have a child, everything changes. Stepping on a plastic rattle in the middle of heat is a. That tends to change things. You got to take a lot of cold showers after the child's born.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing like stepping on a plastic rattle to destroy the mood. Isn't that true?
I'd still go. It wouldn't destroy it for me.
How about stepping on a wet diaper? Would that kill your ardor?
If there was something on my foot, I'd probably just wipe it off.
Okay, let's stop right there. Come on. We're just getting – it's funny, though. It really is. I mean, the old jokes that nothing will stop a man. I mean, look at this guy, this Frenchman. Apparently, if he did what she says, he chased her down the hall. I mean, do you really believe a guy would do that to a maid? He sounds crazy. Do you actually believe he would chase her, throw her down, and force her like that? I find it implausible, incidentally. I think the whole thing was maybe something started and then she turned it into something else for a lawsuit. I think she's going to have a lot of trouble proving her allegations. He's ruined anyway. His professional life is over, but I think she's going to have a lot of trouble proving what she says happened. Charlie in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, let's simplify this. All self-empowerment aside, all elitist stuff aside, marriage is biblically based. Sex is biblically based. It's made for joy and marital unity in Jesus Christ. It's no rocket science. And most importantly, to see God glorified through this union, not out of any kind of self-righteousness, just enjoying free sex with your wife, with your spouse for forever. It's a covenant. It's not contractual. And that's where sex should be channeled. Amen.
All right. You got it right. You got it right. You hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. If there were more people like you, the country would be healthier. New York City, WOR Dave, go ahead, please. Your opinion counts. You're on the Savage Nation.
Now that you mention it, as far as the TV people making love to the camera, now I figured out why I find TV distracting. Before that, I was wondering why.
That's a good separate joke. But no, I remember when I briefly had a 3-month television career, the director always said, look into the lens and make believe you're talking to someone you want to, whatever, you're making love to the camera. I never understood that. I could not consciously understand how you make love to a camera.
I find that my energy isn't directed towards a wife and 3 kids. Once you do that, it's pretty well set.
Amen. There you go. Another healthy man. There's 2 now out of the whole nation. We heard 2 healthy men call the show. So I got to tell you a story that has nothing to do with sex and no sublimation at all. So today I told you I had a guy I knew came on my boat last week and he made a mistake. He tied the docking line in a high wind against the rail instead of through one of the apertures that are made for the line. And then when we docked, he said, I think I damaged your boat. And unfortunately, it tore the stainless steel rail right out of the teak rail, okay? And it really broke my heart because I keep my boat like a model ship. I was really angry and pissed off. So on Monday, I find the welding shop. The guy turns out to be a fan I didn't know, and he does the job for me in a half an hour. Can you imagine? Werner's Welding. Great guy. Straightens the rail out. Today, Tom List of List Marine in Sausalito comes down because I told him there were like a 14 screws, like seven of them were broken off and sticking out of the wood. I don't know if you know anything about woodworking. It's murderously hard to get broken screws out of wood. He did it. He had all the special tools to do it. He fixed that rail and put it back in within less than an hour, but he had a box of tools. And, you know, I watched a man who works on wood and restores wooden ships and has always owned wooden boats, and he's a member of a wooden boat society in Sausalito of old shipwrights who build wooden ships and restore wooden ships. It's an amazing thing to see craftsmen at work in a world that is so computer-driven, you know? I mean, I grew up using tools, but when I meet a man who uses tools for a living and knows how to use tools, I respect them. I know people, by the way, I respect who don't know how to drive a nail. They couldn't cut a piece of wood correctly.
Savage.
Tax reform should follow the Buffett rule. If you make more than $1 million a year, you should not pay less than 30% in taxes. And my Republican friend Tom Coburn is right. Washington should stop subsidizing millionaires. With or without this Congress, I will keep taking actions that help the economy grow. But I can do a whole lot more with your help. Because when we act together, there's nothing the United States of America can't achieve. Anyone who tells you that America is in decline or that our influence has waned doesn't know what they're talking about. America remains the one indispensable nation in world affairs, and as long as I'm president, I intend to keep it that way.
President Barack Obama gave the most absurd welfare State of the Union address in American history. He demanded that the rich pay more taxes and proposed more ideas that he has no way to pay for. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to give us his opinion on last night's Hate of the Union address is Curtis Dubé, a senior policy analyst specializing in tax policy with the Heritage Foundation. Curtis Dubé, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
So give us your thoughts on the welfare State of the Union last night.
Well, it's really more of the same old from President Obama. When it comes to his speeches, I think the best way to analyze them is to read them. You get caught up in a lot of different things, especially with the backdrop that he had for the State of the Union address. You can kind of lose the forest through the trees or lose his main message. When you read it and you see what he actually said, this is more of the same things we've heard for the last 3 years, that the government can manipulate the economy to prosperity by spending, taxing, and regulating in just the right way. This is the same type of thinking that has led us to a stubbornly high unemployment rate and very slow growth. And it's more of the hubris that the government knows how to run the economy better than the individuals, families, and businesses that make up the free market.
Was the welfare State of the Union speech last night just another campaign speech filled with, bread and roses for everybody?
It certainly seemed more like a campaign speech than a speech that was directed towards putting forward an agenda that could pass here in 2012. On taxes, the president put forward two policy proposals, the first being what he referred to as insourcing earlier before the State of the Union address. This is a policy that would punish U.S. businesses that are seeking opportunities abroad and reward those businesses that are bringing jobs back here to the U.S. This is a fundamental misunderstanding of the global market by the president. Both types of businesses are helping the U.S. economy. When a U.S. business chases opportunities abroad, it is good news for the U.S. That means that a U.S. product is in demand in foreign markets, and that demand means growth back here in the U.S. That U.S. company has to add jobs here to chase that new market. The president's policy of punishing these companies for moving overseas, for chasing opportunities overseas, will actually end up hurting the economy because businesses will move permanently abroad to escape the new punitive taxes. And the president also brought up the Buffett rule again. We've heard this over and over again for the last 3 or 4 months. This stems from Warren Buffett's misleading and wrong claim that he pays a lower effective tax rate than his secretary. This is flat out wrong. Warren Buffett does not pay a lower tax rate than his secretary. In a lot of ways, it's an apples to oranges comparison. His secretary pays the income tax on her wage and salary that Warren Buffett pays her. Warren Buffett pays capital gains taxes on the investment income he earns through the sales of stocks. We tax stocks through the capital gains tax at a lower rate because that keeps the cost of capital lower across the economy and allows more capital to be purchased, which means that there's more jobs created and higher wages for all American workers. But when Warren Buffett says that he pays a lower tax rate, he's wrong because he forgets that the capital gains tax is a double tax. Before he can earn those capital gains and then pay that 50% tax rate, the businesses that earn those gains pay the 35% corporate income tax rate. That means his combined rate is actually about 50%, which is much higher than what his secretary pays.
What, if anything, did President Obama say that you and Republicans in Congress could actually agree with?
There isn't a whole lot for conservatives to agree with on the president here, because on the fundamental issues, the biggest fundamental issues that face our country today, he did not show up at all. He voted present like he has in the past. He did not address our debt problem or our entitlement problem in any meaningful way. And it's interesting that in the Republican rebuttal to the president's State of the Union address, Mitch Daniels took on these issues head on. He talked about the conservative approach to fixing entitlement and lowering the debt, which is keeping Social Security and Medicare in place for those who need it most, but reducing and phasing out benefits for the wealthiest Americans among us. So again, the president abdicated his responsibility to lead on these important issues.
The president talked a lot last night about taxes. What effect would Obama's tax policy have on this nation?
The president's tax policies, the ones that he laid out in the State of the Union and the ones that he will likely include in his budget in a couple of weeks, would have a terrible impact on the economy. They would slow our already slow growth, and they would keep more Americans out of work. His Buffett rule, which would impose a minimum 30% tax rate on anyone earning more than $1 million a year, would be a direct tax on job creators, on investors and small businesses, the ones that we need to get the economy going again. His insourcing agenda would tax businesses that are chasing new opportunities abroad and are creating jobs here at home as a result. His tax increases that are sure to come as part of the budget, which again will include phasing out the Bush tax cuts for those making more than $250,000 a year, would again be targeted at job creators and would slow our economic recovery and keep more Americans out of work.
All right. So having said that, what should Obama's tax policy be?
President Obama should be focusing on fundamental tax reform of both the individual income tax and the corporate income tax. Instead of raising taxes, he should be looking to make the tax code more efficient so it's more pro-growth rather than standing in the way of economic growth as it does today, because it levies tax rates that are much too high. On the corporate side, we have the highest corporate income tax rate in the entire industrialized world. That's really a stunning statistic. Our corporations are the least competitive around the world. He'd be looking at eliminating tax on saving and investment, to free up capital to grow the economy and to create jobs, and be looking to make the tax code simpler and fairer. He should be looking at something along the lines that we at the Heritage Foundation have proposed. We call our tax the new flat tax. We'd have one low flat rate. We'd actually even get rid of the payroll tax. We would not tax anyone on their savings. You would only pay tax on the income that you spend each year. There'd only be a few deductions retained, those that are kept in the interest of neutrality. We keep the mortgage interest deduction, deductions for charitable contributions, and anything you spend on higher education. On the corporate side, we'd bring that highest in the world corporate rate down much lower to be on par with international standards. We'd only tax U.S. businesses on the income they earn here in the U.S. rather than the income they earn all around the world, which is in line with what other developed countries do as well. And we'd allow businesses to immediately write off the expense of their capital purchases to encourage the greater formation of capital, which leads to more jobs and higher wages.
Curtis DeBay, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Houston, Texas. Carlos, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, Carlos?
Yes, doctor. I just wanted to say that I think that most males on this planet, animal or human, are not monogamous.
Well, I've read that biologically the male is not monogamous, and that the institution of marriage is one created for the stability of the family. And unto itself, a man has to commit himself to the family by eschewing his sexual urges and focusing instead on the family instead of his desire to sow his wild oats on a regular basis.
Well, I can agree with that, doctor. But I'm glad that you are kind of agreeing with me as far as.
Well, I am agreeing with you. I am. Biologically, the male wants to sow his seed in a wide variety of manner, in a wide variety of disperse his seed. Let's put it to you that way. The male is made that way. But the institution of marriage is designed to raise a family with a father. And as you well know, the healthier children come from a father and a mother. The nuclear family produces healthier children, no matter what the liars tell you in the psychological world, no matter how they lie to you, the child needs a mother and a father. It is a strain for some men, but it's not a strain for all men. I assume you yourself are not married, Carlos. You have not found the woman who you're willing to satisfy your urges with.
No, I've been married 40 years.
Oh. So how did you control your non-monogamy?
I didn't.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. Is this a confessional or a talk radio show?
No, it's just the truth.
All right, so wait a minute. So you're telling me you haven't married 40 years, but you have not been faithful?
No, I have not.
Now, I'm not trying to pry. It really isn't my business. But, in other words, does your wife know about your impulses?
I've had many mistresses in my 40 years. I have several. Many, I would say.
No, but I'm saying, but is your wife aware of them?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's no way that you can hide women and children. And at my age, you get involved with a woman. She usually has children. You're not going to hide no woman and two kids or something like that from anyone.
But I'm saying, you're original. Are you still married to the same woman that you married originally?
Yes, I am.
And does she know this is who you are?
She's very intelligent, and yes, she knows exactly who I am.
All right, you know what? Let me explain something to you. Many women will accept that some men are like that, and they live with it, by the way. And apparently that's the lifestyle you chose, but of course most women wouldn't. And by the way, social mores are changing to the extent that many women would like to enjoy the same freedom in that regard that men have thought to be their privilege, and that's the problem today. And that's why many young women will not get married. They're not willing to suppress their sexuality for the sake of a family either, which is why the population is dying in the United States of America. The more highly educated they are, the lower the morality quotient. And it's absolutely true. The higher the educational quotient, generally, the lower the morality, the lower the LM, the LMQ. There's nothing you can do about it. And I've talked about this, and I think sexuality is always an interesting topic. I think that ultimately sexuality is very political. And I guess what I'm getting at here is that the left-wing establishment now is trying to declare sexuality, male sexuality, in the traditional sense of very hypersexual male sexuality, to be an illness so they can declare it to be such and put it into the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual, whatever that may be. Virtually every act of a human being is now considered to be a disorder. When the day they put liberalism in the DSM is the day I'll start believing in psychology. Because as you well know, I've defined this as a mental disorder. There's no other explanation for the suicidal behavior of extreme liberalism, by the way. Now, to say Tiger Woods, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the Frenchie, who are caught in sex scandals, are suddenly sex addicts, I don't think they're sex addicts. They're hypersexual men. But I don't know that that's an illness. That's the way they are. And by the way, Frenchie's wife knew what he was doing. Everyone in France knew that he was a socialist perv. Everybody in France knew that this is who Frenchie was. If he actually did this, he was a fool. In his case, this was not a disorder. This was stupidity. With that man's power and money, he could have dialed a woman up in New York City at Softitel Hotel. You're telling me the Softitel Hotel chain couldn't have provided him with the service he was looking for? Why did he have to impose himself upon a chambermaid? And that's why I don't think it's a true story. Something doesn't make sense in the whole picture. Now, if he did this, then maybe he is mentally nuts, if he actually jumped on that woman and forced her. You know, I mean, then that's not even a mental illness. That's a criminal act. You know what I'm saying? Now that they can wear trousers, I have a better idea. Why can't maids go in two at a time? Why solo? Especially for a suite of this size in the Softitel Hotel? It makes no sense to me. So, okay, there's a lot of Strauss-Kahn cartoons coming out from around the world. I believe that the Softitel Hotel should provide them with the option of wear. And frankly, when it protects a woman from a crazed male, I'm all for it. They should have the right to do their job without being molested. Okay, let's be clear. But the fact of the matter is, I think this was beyond that. I think this man, if he did rape her, was a sick man. It had nothing to do with his sexuality, incidentally. But anyway, let's get back to the desire on the part of the liberal establishment to declare hypersexuality as a disorder. What do you think about that? Linda in New York, WOR, go ahead. What do you think?
I could say that I'm a hypersexual if it's put that way, because I like men and I like to have sex. But it doesn't mean that I'm having sex with many men, right? I have desires. I think about sex in my mind, but that doesn't make me a sick person. Right.
Well, but let's say in your daily life, let's say you're going around, do you fantasize many men during the day? As many, like, say you're in New York City, millions of people, do you often get like, oh wow, he's great, blah blah blah?
If I find a very good-looking man, yes, I can think about it.
So in that sense, you're no different than a male. It's just that males think they're the only ones who do it. And by the way, a lot of men suffer guilt. They think there's something wrong with them because they can't stop obsessing about sex. But this is interesting. I think this was studied even in my day 30 years ago, and it was found that men fantasize about women almost all day long, even at work. They cannot stop fantasizing about sexuality, especially when they're younger.
Right.
But isn't that nature's imperative? Isn't that what produces children? To have that kind of urge that's so overwhelmingly powerful and overwhelmingly strong, especially in young, viable people, is that not what nature designed us to have in order for us to find a mate and to have children?
Exactly.
Right. So in other words, it's normal to have that kind of impulse. And men should not. Yeah, at the end of the day, men or women who have these fantasies all the time, if it's not really wrecking their lives, why feel bad about it? This is who you are. This is how the machine set it up. You're supposed to feel those things. Now, on the other hand, there are those who sublimate that drive and usually produce great things, incidentally. If you can take that sexual energy, this is an amazing discussion. You got to understand that this is very Freudian, by the way, what I'm about to tell you, but I'm from another era. If you believe that Freud was correct, and I do believe he was the genius of all geniuses, he was the peasant avante of psychology. Of psychiatry. Nobody has ever succeeded him in his genius. And I've read all of Freud, I've read all of Jung, and I've read all of Adler. I have not seen anyone come along since. I know there are behavioralists and they use medication, but in terms of analyzing things, Sigmund Freud in his analysis by saying that, in essence, I'll make it very simple. It's like trying to say Einstein developed a theory of relativity E=mc². I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that. Freud said that we're all fundamentally sexual creatures and driven by our sexuality all of our lives, and all of our neurosis is derived from repressed sexuality. I think that's a fairly good summation of Freud's Freudian psychology, right? Is that we're all sexual, and all of our neurotic behavior or even psychotic behavior derives from sexual repression. Now, if you start with that premise, a lot of your life starts to make sense. But you can go from that to this, which is if you learn how to take that intense coil of desire within you, let's say you're obsessing, you can't control it. But if you learn how to sublimate that energy, think of it as an energy in you, instead of hating it, instead of running from it, instead of fearing it, learn how to use it. You can literally destroy mountains. You can create mountains with that energy. What do you think an artist is doing by sculpting or painting obsessively? You can look at it from the point of view of Freud and say that it's sexual sublimation, if you wish. You can say that every building in Manhattan is a result of sexual sublimation. I'm not the first one to say this to you. But remember, I come from another age. I went to college in the 1950s.
Savage.